The bigger your company grows, the more you are pushed as a founder to the bottom of that pyramid. And energy is important because imagine if you have a very inefficient GTM approach. You'll be taking in a call, you'll be putting a lot of effort and time into the wrong channel with the wrong value propositions, with the wrong logic.
Welcome to the Leaders of B2B podcast, a weekly show where we bring you interviews and in-the-weeds expertise with today's B2B experts and thought leaders. You can see more about today's episode and guest by visiting our website at leadersofb2b.com.
Hey, leaders, welcome back. Really excited to welcome today's guest, Eamon John Turan. This is coming from the Ukraine. I think that's the first time I've done this, so I'm pretty excited. He's got like a whole crew here. I think he has a whole film studio running behind it. This must be, John is a famous guy. We are very honored to have you. John, introduce yourself, man, and your work. This is going to be a fun conversation.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, David. Yeah, so my name is Eamon John Turan, and I'm what widely called the GTM authority for most of B2B companies. I am Dutch. I live normally in London, but right now I am in the west of Ukraine in beautiful Lviv, basically like the Oxford of Ukraine. It's very beautiful out here, in my opinion, and also backed up by pretty decent reports. The best and the most affordable technical people in the world are actually in Lviv. So it's also called the IT outsourcing capital of Europe. I'm building an AI company on the back of my strategy consultancy in London. I'm able to develop five times more as I would have had in London with better talent. Again, my opinion, also backed up data.
Opinions and data, that's what you need.
Exactly.
No, that's fantastic. I want to get into those things. Start us with baseline. So even coming into this, and I've been in startup marketing and sales for two decades, and I'm still like, what the hell does GTM and go-to-market really mean, right? I could look it up, but people use these terms very differently. And then we'll get to the other term that is AI that everybody just uses. They don't really know what that means now. Anyway, I'll give you two acronyms, and can you just put some structure around this for the audience so that we don't just assume everybody knows. What is that?
Let's start with GTM, shall we? GTM is short for go to market. This is the most wider terminology that encapsulates marketing strategy, marketing execution, market intelligence, social media, marketing, sales, everything related, even product, like rolling out products. Like when you close the deal, you're onboarding your client in the most systematic manner. Everything falls under GTM.
So it's the journey of a person without even a name or an email or any kind of interest, like got touched somewhere in the ether all the way through. They're now a customer and we have to actually do things for them. So it's almost like defies how you would arrange, like from an organizational structure standpoint, the whole revenue function, customer experience, all these things wrapped up together, which then speaks to how and why how do you organize that? What is the idea of, it's almost like everybody in the company is somehow involved. So therefore, what? You have to put this mental construct then around it. What is that for you?
That's a very good question. Look, this is a podcast, so I don't have my awesome diagrams because diagrams really help with comprehending complex concepts, but I'll try it. So imagine a pyramid, okay?
Yeah.
So on the top, basically, go-to-market really starts with products, obviously. Yeah.
And you drew the pyramid upside down in the air, right?
So Yeah, exactly. Like the women's bathroom, you often see the upside-down pyramid. And at the top of it, you essentially have product. Thereafter, you got marketing strategy. Mm-hmm. Underneath it, you got market intelligence. Yeah. Then you have traffic coming in. And this is, by the way, mostly B2B funnel. And then you got what we call MQLs, market qualified leads. Then underneath it, you got sales accepted leads that have the criteria to accept the lead. Underneath it, you got sales qualified lead. And then you got the closed one. And finally, onboarding. It is best described as a relay race. You know, when you're in the Olympics, you know, give the baton to the next one that takes it in the next one. And if you have a well-oiled go-to-market structure, operation in your firm, you will be very likely to go to market in the most cost-effective and smarter way that allows you to basically not lose all of your energy. So people often talk and go to market as in it's cost and time. What people often forget is that if you have a well-oiled machine, it's also your energy. So I'm just doing my middle finger here. I'll do this one. It's also energy. Like
that's what everybody says to marketers, right? Just middle finger. Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately. Yeah. No, whole different topic. Come to that later. But yeah, the energy is very important because imagine yourself, like a founder is by nature, if you ask me, from all the success stories I've been involved with, the founders typically take the seat as three things, especially in tech companies. The innovator, the kind of the leader, the visionary where people follow, it's the flag holder. And finally, I'd say it's really the salesperson. Yeah, whether the person is naturally talented at selling or not, regardless, customers, clients, they want to see the founder part of that funnel, usually at the bottom of the funnel, but in the beginning. So the bigger your company grows, the more you are pushed as a founder to the bottom of that pyramid. And energy is important because imagine if you have a very inefficient GTM approach, you'll be taking in a call, you'll be putting a lot of effort and time into the wrong channel with the wrong value propositions, with the wrong logic. And imagine your sales teams as well, right? I mean, there is a finite amount of dopamine per day. Like it's a lot of research. You can quote Dr. Huberman, he'll know better. It's a muscle. You have a finite amount a day. That dopamine, endorphins and everything else, they all this chemical combination is enthusiasm, and you sell with enthusiasm. You don't sell with, hello, welcome. Yes, we have a great product.
Now you're speaking my language, man. I'm that guy at the bottom of the funnel.
Okay, let's talk after the call.
Make that go-to-market system, defend my calendar performance time at all costs for the absolute best call. And you're absolutely right. That's it. Like you just run out of juice. If I do 8 of those calls in a day, I can barely get out of my chair because I'm leaving it all on Zoom now. And the performance nature of that, I think that's really important. I'm very encouraged to have somebody say that the way you just did, because the science behind it is absolute. And I know, in fact, a lot of your work is driven by scientific mindset. That's intriguing to me. I don't know if it's intriguing to anybody else, but I'm the host, so I want to know about the science.
Screw you guys. I want to know. Yeah, no, the science is important because the science is evidence-led, right? It's based on metadata. It's on focus groups. It's on controlled surveys. And it's important to understand to run your entire go-to-market. So whether it's your marketing strategy or your sales methodologies or your technique, it's fundamental that they are based on market-tested corporate strategy, persuasion sciences, and communication sciences, because that's how our brain works. In our case, so for my consultancy, not for my AI, but also in our AI, we are mapping out the entire SaaS workflow for all B2B companies against how the mind works. As an example, within that pyramid, we take one piece of science within the field of persuasion sciences. We take the ethos, pathos, logos approach. Ethos is credibility first, then pathos, then logos. Another one is typically the advanced golden circle. Start with why, then how, and what. Now, these are two. We mapped out 6 at the same time across the funnel. So we actually know what you should leverage stage of that funnel. I'll give you an example. So imagine you walk on the street, right? And someone gives you $100. Take it. I mean, your first instinct is fight or flight. And what the hell?
Right. Yeah. Am I getting ripped off? What's the catch?
Exactly. Well, we know. Thank you. Bye. No, that's usually not how it goes. And so the first thing is your mind.
Actually, I got to tell you, my first instinct is they know they're CAC. But
fair enough. You get there and you look at the guy and you're like, why? And the first thing your brain does is automatically analyzes the person. How is that person dressed? Does he have a shirt on? Is that person eloquent? Is he drunk? Is he not drunk? And all of those, you know, within seconds, you've already had 20 ticks that you kind of went off. Half of them you might even not realize, but the guy is signaling credibility or lack of credibility or credibility. You're like, okay, guy's decently dressed. He's well-spoken. He's well-groomed. He's not a maniac. I keep having to remind my Dutch mind that I should not curse on a podcast. He's not a maniac.
You can. We're crazy here.
No, your kids also watch. So no, let's keep it. The next thing you would like to do, you want to hear why. You're right. So why are you doing this? You want to hear a story. Powerful. It's a story. Walt Disney does it great. It's telling the story. Oh, okay. I'm a businessman. And this is my way of helping young entrepreneurs by giving them randomly $100 on the street. I've been in your shoes. And I understand how it feels like juggle 50 things at the same time. Yeah, this is what I want to do. This is my way of giving back to society. Okay. Quite decent story. Oh, I'll bite. It's logos, logic, terms. What do you want for it, basically? I like nothing, actually. I just want a hug. That's on the term. Gives you $100. Hug. Thanks, man. Off you go. So obviously it's a metaphor, but that's how, for example, as one example of sciences applied a marketing sales funnel. So in the beginning, you really push on credibility. We got 5 stars in Clutch, or we got 5-star review on Google, or here are all our net promoter score. Really bandwagon bias of social proof, logos, stars everywhere. That's the first thing. Because this is, okay, I'll give you 10 seconds of my time, because clearly you're a credible company. Then it's really about, why are you reaching out to me? Like, we have this top new technology. We think that your company would really benefit from it. Founder of a B2B company. We know all too well how it feels. So perhaps you'd like to do a trial. Not bad. What are the terms of the trial? Look at 4 weeks, fully free. If you like it, and put your credit card details. If you don't, we move on. That one example, how you can apply this into basically the sales of marketing sales operations after you apply your marketing strategy.
Right. What's amazing, it's just saying, I bet you have an opinion on this or I've thought about it, but when you described that flow, there will be, and I wonder if this is in your model, cultural differences. For example, just in the United States, I grew up in the New York area, New York City. If I get a call at all, that's a pretty good indication. Then I move to the South, where everybody will have coffee with you and do 100,000 calls, and bless your heart, you will never do business at all. So how does that factor in? Because I'm sure it's also different. So you say, hey, I'm Dutch and I'm direct and we might throw it right in your face. And I go, that's cool. I'm from New Jersey. That's how I roll. But if you do that, and I learned the hard way, if you do that in a more genteel or more equal, egalitarian type of environment, that comes back in your face. So I would imagine that factors in a lot.
It does. It's a very good question. We don't have the granularity of the different states in the US, unfortunately, but we do have it across countries. I'll give you an example. Hofstede is culture matrix. Basically, the matrix where map out the clusters of values and individualism versus collectivism mapped. Yeah. Where it shows, for example, funny enough, that the Dutch, the Australians, New Zealand, the UK, and then America, they're all clustered together. So it's a good indicator that within your company, the resources you have, which is time, money, you know, all of the materials you've written, is that if you target America, it's easier to take that success story and scale it to the UK or to the Netherlands, even though it's not our native language, right? Even though we are the highest speaking non-native English speaker in the world, we operate in the same mentality. It's much harder, for example, to take a very successful product or service to, say, as an American company, I don't know, the Middle East or right. To other further far Asian countries.
Far East, yeah.
So you have to be smart. You can't just, oh, I got an uncle in, Singapore. So let's go there. Yeah. People think that have the little success. Like we got 3 clients in the US, we got 5 clients in the UK, we got 2 clients in the DACH region, say Austria. Oh, we can grow in Austria because we already have 2. We can do the same. No, it might be just your personal network. really doesn't work that way. And if you look at the stats, the graveyard of companies, really in the chasm, which is the marketing term where, you know, when you push out a product or service to market, start with innovators, early majority, early innovators, early adopters, early majority, late majority.
Crossing the Chasm was the book, right?
Yes. Exactly. So between early innovators and early majority, there's a gap.
Right.
If you want to break that gap, you will have to think of going to market, a scientific, systematic way of going.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I just talked to a CMO from a consumer beauty company type of things, or makeup and supplements and things like that. Founders based in South Korea, bringing to market a very scientific product that's very successful in South Korea, bringing it to the US, and just the assumptions of, no, you don't understand Americans like at all. Like, they won't behave this way, and stop.
They will eat you up.
I don't, or it's just even stuff like, I don't know, interesting things. And I don't want to, I'm not sure I know beauty habits in South Korea, but it's like a good example of, let's say they spend 4 hours a week on personal makeup and things like that. Americans are like, if I have 10 minutes in the car doing it underneath the visor, like, I use two products, I don't use 40. And just the like cultural differences of that type of thing are huge. Then in B2B, it maybe isn't as hard, except the only time I see those differences is just the bottom of funnel, where you go, I got from messaging that is 1,000 to 1, you know, thank you marketing for doing that. However, I have a 1-to-1 call with an individual who contributed a very small, potentially outlier piece of the average ICP. So that persona that we have to use to go broad is in fact represented by a bunch of individuals, none of whom are the exact match. Please also help me have a 1-to-1 call in a fashion that can reach that. And I think that's the push and pull top to bottom of messaging that is very important to me. So for example, why isn't every marketing team watching every sales call that ever happened? That's a little ridiculous in some cases, but
yeah, it really is. We had this, I won't say which company, but from one of the three blue chip companies that I worked at, I was one of them. I was charged of basically doing the performance analytics for the entire EMEA region. My reports would go up to senior vice president, heads of country, up to the CMO. I can tell you, like, I would look at per channel, what channel works in which country, you know, call syndication or social media or inbound for each country. But I would also look at operational, which is, you know, how are the marketing teams performing? How are the SDR teams performing? How are the sales teams performing? And I went to quite good schools, and you always learn, and like, oh, you know, marketing and sales, they're always divided. Da, da, da.
Yeah, whatever.
You academics, you don't know nothing. So I went there and it was really divided. So we would not, like, it would be so cultural, like, to your point, so insane. Like, SDRs would complain about, hey, marketing, you are not being very strict in qualifying, so we are wasting our time, energy, and resources with, excuse my French, shitty leads. And then marketing will say, nah, you guys are lazy. Like, you can't get a no to maybe and a maybe to yes.
It's a classic story, yeah.
The answer really is deep dive data, like really deep diving into the data. Part of that data is two parts. One is the quantitative data, which is quite straightforward, conversion rates, etc. The other is qualitative data, which is line by line going through the transcripts, even better sitting next to the SDRs or recording the calls and making and understanding where's the discrepancy. Is it indeed the marketing team being inaccurate with their qualification, or further down the line, we have a terrible marketing strategy, or it is the SDR who is ill-equipped or is not well-trained, so it requires a bit more training, a bit more confidence, or very simple, human, lazy, not interested.
Good.
Could also be.
And you know, I think you're right to mention those other two factors first, because even if you have great potential, SDR is always going to be that role that gets crapped on and is the young and hungry or whatever, and just slamming calls. You obviously have to train those people. And there's a lot of chatter now about, hey, is the SDRR rule dead? There's always got to be something.
No.
There's always got to be something that's dead. Otherwise, we can't write
about growing
on LinkedIn. But yeah, I think that he's exactly right. And that's why I don't work at big companies anymore, because it drives me crazy. So I want that full integration top to bottom. So every call we do can feed the engine and go, here's exactly what the customer wants to know by the time they got to a one-to-one conversation. Thus, what do I have? I have a probabilistic ranked version of every single question that I should be answering in marketing to as many people as possible at the top. And if you do that, qualification automatically goes up because you have the best customer self-selecting out or in.
Yeah, I find it really sad. Like, I mean, I have multiple reasons, but this is by far my primary reason to be on this podcast. It's not easy. Got a crew and, you know, media training and everything else. And it's nerve-wracking as well after a long day of 8 engineering meetings and 3 product meetings. It's not easy, but I really do. If you look at the biggest problem here in the market, which for decades now, is that the science, kind of the positive Pandora's box, as it may, of going to market that explodes and successes and everything else. All that knowledge and skill set and logic and sequences and sciences, they're all very closely kept secret by either the big tech that are in the forefront of building Marter, and of course, we will be part of them, and we will be more democratic. And also, you'll see. Number 2 is the top tier strategy consultancy, like McKinsey, BCG, and Bain. And as an SME, not even just as a startup, but you know, you don't really have a choice, because you can either accidentally mishire a head of marketing that actually has no idea what they're doing, or you can go to a freelancer through one of the platforms. If you look at the stats, it doesn't fit the purpose. Or you can spend $500,000 with McKinsey to develop a marketing strategy, a roadmap to success for 3 years, which money you don't have. So what do you do? So now we see, for example, old as they, that we all know that 9 out of 10 companies fail, but we often don't know. If you really dig deep into the data, most of those failures can be attributed to go-to-market reasons, whether you don't have a marketing strategy or your market intelligence is subpar. So meaning you're going after a market that is declining or shrinking. You're just basically fighting against the wind. Or you have the wrong pricing strategy, or you are using wrong value propositions with the wrong ICPs or persona. I mean, it's a mathematical equation with 20 different variables will do wrong. So you don't know. And as a mid-sized company, you're approximately, if you look at, for example, the latest report from Salesforce, 70% of people don't hit their sales target. It's insane 70. And finally, the big enterprise, because of bureaucracy and everything else, they're very slow to adopt leading MarTech. So if you have, for example, a leading AI marketing technology that can make those companies more efficient and everything else. I mean, we've done this, like getting a pilot alone, you know, got technical due diligence, legal due diligence, commercial due diligence, you know, one stakeholder after the other. Oh my God, it takes you anywhere between 6 months to 2 years to roll out a pilot. The result of that is that those big enterprises, they usually have a customer acquisition cost that is approximately 30%, according to McKinsey, higher than the average. So across the board, you know, regardless of size, you can see that, you know, that level of intelligence is really monopolized. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, the entire marketing and go-to-market, or let's just say go-to-market industry, is corrupt,
very opaque.
And even with my, you know, small me and my team and everything else, we are really pushing hard. We're making a lot of professional and personal sacrifices to make this more democratic.
That's fantastic. And is that then what you imagine Pebbles to be? Because we haven't gotten to the AI side, which is my understanding is here is the platform that is going to unlock that. Please throw it at me. I was going to join the waitlist, but I figured I'd get it from the real guy himself. So
to sign up, I'll give you a special code for this. I'm sure my engineers would appreciate that sarcasm. They don't. They're like, we got better shit to do.
Just tell everybody, for the listeners, you get it free for 5 years. No, I'm just kidding. All right. No, tell me.
No, you will actually. We do have that. We do have 1 year, actually. early first 10,000 users will get the same pricing for an entire year. They will get a priority of all features and they will enjoy all of the latest tech. Same price. Like, because our pricing will be like quadrupled eventually. It's still cents on the dollar compared to what you would
do. That's what I would do with my pricing. So you got to get that adoption. That sounds awesome. Plus those people, early adopters, they give you the best feedback if you treat them well.
Exactly. I always tell my clients, like, don't be greedy. You know, it's first adoption feedback loop. It's a relationship you have with your audience. Then it's revenue and then it's profit.
Well, early adopters who are happy are the biggest evangelists. I tell people all the time the tools that I love and I want to adopt them right away. And if it didn't go well, I'm not the guy that's going to post on LinkedIn about how much you suck. But I think that it's a very good idea to do what you're doing. And the best apps that I've seen do the same thing. So tell about the tool. It's like you basically have taken the scientific-based methodology into something with AI. I mean, everything's with AI now. So let's talk about that.
Okay. First and foremost, we are a tech company. So The AI just makes us smarter, better, faster. It's important to know because most of go-to-market companies in the world, especially young companies, are built by engineers.
Right.
And I might offend many people right now, but I come from a family of doctors. But in my head, engineers are more important to society than doctors. I really think so, because they move society. Technology that kind of brings up to, like, you know, a cure to cancer comes from technology, for example.
Right.
So I just want to say that before I say the following thing, which is engineers should not, you know, try to solve problems, in my opinion, that they don't understand. And there's a lot of go-to-market companies that are built by engineers who build amazing technology, really crazy. But they don't really solve a problem. So they build it and they're like, let me try to find a product market fit, which is almost like...
Well, this happens in every sector. Yeah, go-to-market being just, oh, that looks inefficient, so let's build a tool for it. But yeah, then it's you know, solution looking for a problem, and well, they don't know anything about go-to-market, which then is a double shot in the foot because they don't know how to sell their own thing that actually isn't fit to the market anyway. That's a good recipe for failure.
Yeah. So like asking me, hey, listen, John, can you build an AI technology to automate workflows in big law firms like Loyens & Loo? I studied 1.5 years in law and before I switched to management and marketing strategy. Bro, I can't do that.
Right.
Because I don't know the intrinsics, you know, the nuances of the entire kind of how do the different departments work together? What is kind of the overall, why they accept the protocol in society? How do they work for us to communicate with an external client? I have no idea. So how can...
That's why subject matter experts need to be part of a team with engineers to go, I understand why you made that assumption, but you're completely wrong. And the tacit knowledge that comes out of and the pattern recognition of 20 years of doing a thing, I probably wouldn't have told you that unless I was sitting with you and contributing with you, because it wouldn't have even occurred to me. Why? I'm a subject matter expert in that thing and I take it for granted.
Exactly. Yeah, perfectly put. To build on that, I'm obviously nothing without our AI director. So we could have joked internally that I'm the mother of the AI because I build the logic, the sciences, I map it out incorrectly, and he digitalizes them and trains our web of agent. And we're really doing it together. We have we got like 20, and it's insane. But we have three teams. Like, we got the traditional engineering team tech that builds our platform, our SaaS. And then we have the AI team that builds our agent. And then we have the product and the research team. I'm the lead researcher. Honestly, I don't want to be the CEO. I have to, but I'd rather do the innovation and, you know, talking to clients and to thought leaders like yourself and, you know, push this knowledge onward. And Pebbles AI is best described, I think, let me start with a metaphor first, is when you think of product design, typically think of Figma. They really nailed it when it comes to, you know, product design. So if you think of internal comms, you think of Slack. They nailed it. This year, August 2024 onwards, when you think of B2B go-to-market, you'll think of Pebble. And what we really are is a go-to-market B2B platform where you can do three essential things that are the hardest to do. One, generate actionable intelligence. So imagine having your own senior analyst from McKinsey always by your side. That's one web of agent that you have within the platform. Number two is to generate precise and accurate marketing content, which is basically your head of marketing at one department at Google, for example, that knows exactly how to write certain structures. And then finally, your marketing materials and sales asset, like RFQs, RFP, proposals, service agreements. And the best way to describe this is with the knowledge of, again, a web of agent. When I say agents, AI agents that are AI thinking agents autonomously, and so it's not AI powered. They're really like nonstop. They learn actually more and more the more you use it. Those assets and those materials are best described as, for example, the incredible men and women at, for example, the inside sales team or large customer sales at Microsoft or Cisco, for example. So those three things. So intelligence, actual intelligence, accurate and precise content, and marketing the sales assets, you will be able to generate within one platform. Now that's the AI part. And then obviously you have the continuous learning. So the more you use the platform, the more the platform becomes a central GTM cognition around your business. Sure. Whether you are a freelancer or you're a big tech company of 1,000 people, it will essentially be the core of your business. And we have built this entire thing from the ground up without relying on any other models. Yes, we use computational power from OpenAI, and we use, you know, certain other, you know, we leverage certain main primary mother model, but we have our own, you know, if you see them as kind of, if you take a Swiss watch as a metaphor, if they give us the day, like which day is it? We have built such an AI native architecture that allows us to give you the precise minute and second of the day. Why is it important? Because B2B, unlike B2C, man, you got a couple of seconds to get that attention. And you know, these are not small tickets. You're not buying a iPhone of $800 here. I mean, where tickets are B2B anywhere from $1,000 to $100,000 or $1 million. It requires more thinking, more leverage, and more smoothing. And we are now in a more digitalized global world. So right. We can't just go to every restaurant and have a steak and a red wine with a prospective client. We don't have the time.
I don't know about you, but I miss those days. Those were the good old days. It was fatter.
Okay, fair enough. Definitely more delicious, but I'm not sure about, not scalable. Like if you're not like in Silicon Valley or in New York or the heart of London and what have you.
Here I am operating in the middle of the Southern America. Like, I mean, it's like, I'm a half an hour from my city and it's a growing city, but I'm not going to hop on a plane all the time. And I don't need to. I'm talking to you in the Ukraine on Zoom. And it's amazing. And I think here's an interesting thing that I want to know about. So I'm going to guess you have this in there, and AI essentially can do this because humans can't, but you have to compensate for the outrageous pace of change. So it's like if I have humans doing all the things in my B2B go-to-market stack, all my shit's wrong within 2 months. And I have to go back and fix all my content. Every assumption that I made in my go-to-market effort, one of my early companies right now is doing this, and I just did 30 customer discovery meetings. I'm just like, every single thing we did is wrong. So I'm going to have to block some days to go back and fix all that stuff. I would love if there was a tool to go, I need you to take everything that you know from the world, and I'm going to teach you all the things that I just did. In fact, here, just take these 30 calls, fix all my marketing. That'd be the greatest thing that ever happened in my life.
You sound like my AI director. He wants to get there as well. Like, just here, take it, fix it.
Yeah, here's a bunch of calls. Fix my marketing.
Yeah. So we're getting there.
You're getting there?
We're getting there. You will, like, one very nifty feature we will have, for example, is, you know, you'll have your own library. So Imagine there's an AI conference in London. And you go to every year. And you meet certain people that are, you know, prospective leads. And so you want to reach out to them afterwards. Hey, nice to meet you. It was great. Thank you for the beer. Let's have some conversations and how we can help. Da, 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 da. And this happens every year, right? So with our platform, you'll be able to generate this insanely effective campaign, understands the nuances that you've already met the person and then that you already, you know, the system already knows where you are in the funnel. So it, to my previous point, it knows exactly what science is to use, exactly that. It doesn't use ethos, for example, credibility. Because the person already knows, David, right, you're a credible person. You have your track record. Now I want to know, at this point, you have my attention. I want to know, what will you do for me? So at that point, we're talking about logo, here, thing, blah, blah. So when you create a campaign and you're happy and you share it, because, you know, we have collaboration features with the rest of your library as within your source of truth, where you can, you know, save your campaign, your intelligence, as well as your asset. So you can always come back. There's one place you always go for all your B2B stuff. That library, old website is the library when you get a job. The further learnings for your web of agents, you know, you're in your, unless I'm making your head of mark at Google, as well as your sales, you know, senior sales representatives at, I don't know, Microsoft. It teaches them more. During our onboarding, they're already at bachelor level. Imagine you're doing a bachelor at a Harvard and you hire that person. Yeah. That can, but the more you use it, the more you push in validated and agreed on intelligent content and assets, the more the system, the AI, the web of agents learns about your company, and the better and the more precise and accurate and effective against.
Yeah, I could see why the testing and onboarding at a big company like would, or the piloting of this would be a whole bunch of awesome time to get, no, but hey, we need your data. And they go, no, no, you don't put our data into the AI.
But it's public data. Right. Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. So I resonate with the challenges of being like, but I have a better thing and you just need to turn it on and put some gas in the engine. And they go, no, you're not going to have gas. I want to see it drive first.
Yeah, basically. But we don't compromise. So like when the onboarding, we don't cut corners. That's the one. So we have a scientific onboarding, one of many IPs we have. In fact, we're in the process of patenting bits and pieces of our IP. Your company does, so we can accurately, you know, it's one time, 45 minutes of investment at most, and that's it. The rest of the time, instead of taking 3 days to write up a proposal, it will take you 50 minutes.
I want it right now, man, because I write a lot of proposals and it's the same stuff over and over again. And I've quickly evolve to say, okay, cool. Hey, ChatGPT, read this website and here, this is what I'm doing. And I'm going to give you a stream of consciousness. And I want you to turn that into the summary for my proposal. And here's six proposals that I already did so you can understand my tone and language. I don't want to do that by hand. We are at the very dumbest level. You could do it, but it's just clunky as hell. But you use that sort of like bachelor level analyst thing. And that's why I encourage everybody to start. This isn't even that hard to use. Get out there and at least start playing with these tools, because it is, in fact, a junior analyst. And it's available to you right now, and it's free, and it'll do all kinds of weird stuff. And I just keep testing it because I'm just like, this is amazing. I want to know this. Take all this stuff and give me thoughts that I didn't think of and let it run. And so I think that the organization of and the essentially packaging and alignment of these capabilities into a platform like you're talking about and with the agents is a huge leap. It's just basically go do something in tandem, run that assembly line, run that, you called it the relay race. Like, cool, run the relay race for me. This is the next step. And that's what we want to have.
I remember, I think it was a CEO of Bumble that said, you know, in the future, in a dating app, you will not have, you know, people interacting with each other, but it's just your agents that you have trained up to understand who you are and what you want that are basically, they're running with other, like interacting with other agents. Now, that's really a very interesting thought. And that might work. I'm not single, but if I were to say, theoretically, a 25-year-old young lad living in 2040, and I have a really demanding job, I would give Bumble their entire agent, everything else, find me the perfect mate. As if we, let me go pure nature here, partner. Great, that agent role, well, I'm still doing my work. I mean, this is great. Unfortunately, with B2B, although we can automate and generate everything else, again, the bigger the ticket size and or the bigger the complexity of rolling out products and services, whether, so if you think of a matrix, products, services, cookie cutter, as in, you know, pre-built, like hardware or bespoke, whatever you are in that matrix, you require a certain human touch and you require really personalized approach for each of them. Doing that personalized approach takes so much time for one prospective client. And imagine if you have many, I mean, you won't have any time for your loved ones. You won't have any time for health, of going to the gym, or I've been there myself. So it's good to automate where you can automate. And certain things are very difficult to automate where you have to be a veteran, a subject matter expert, and you can't see it, but I have many scars and I've been worked in big tech and in startups as well across the board. I know it. Frankly, and I'm not just sound cocky, I know exactly what to do. I know exactly how the sciences interact across the B2B funnel. I know exactly how to build the framework so my brilliant AI and technology teams can digitalize for you so you can just use it.
I love it. That's fantastic. I look forward to being in the loop to know about these things. Before we run out of time, I wanted to do the personal story of, because I just think like people need to have, you know, perspective. And especially in the US, we don't deal with stuff like this. So the first time John and I were scheduled to do this interview some weeks ago, I get an email from John and he's saying sorry to me, which is just, oh my gosh, really? And he's saying, I need to go into the shelter because there's about to be a rocket attack in Western Ukraine. And I go, yeah, dude, it's okay. Like, what just happened? And you're just like, yeah, man, I'm sorry, I can't take the call. And I think the perspective of where like geopolitics hits startups is such an interesting thing there. I don't have to deal with crap like that. Like my car broke down the other day or my kid's sick at school. Life's so hard, right? No, but I'm not in a shelter like dodging a rocket. So I just wondered if you would comment on that, because I thought like the human perspective of that was just so compelling to me.
Yeah, it's very kind of you. I don't see it that way personally. I have a personal mission, and you can probably relate that back to my parents. They were both retired now, but both academics. They spent their entire life helping people. I'm way more of a capitalist than they are, but I do have that core of my parents. So I spent the last 10 years of my life volunteering for small, medium-sized enterprise across different accelerators. So like yourself, like if you have a purpose in life, you know, when rain or shine, or in this case, when rockets or shine, you know, you power through. They say in London, you keep calm and carry on. And it was actually my Dutch-Germanic side, like, ah, shit. I have to reschedule. And like, if we hate two things, it's like being late and rescheduling last minute, because it's just very inappropriate. And yeah.
Your manners around this unique circumstance were amazing and made us all just go, really? Like, I would have been totally cool if after the rocket attack, you were like, hey man, this is what happened.
Oh, no. I don't do ghosting. No, hell no. No. I've been on the other side of ghosting. It's not pleasant. Now, look, we are, in case any VC listens to this, we're pretty well backed up with industry leaders. But in the future, I would like to probably find all our IP and our finances, our legalities are parked in London by our tech team. And I want to be amongst them. I want to be here. I can go at any time to Holland or to Austria or to London, but I don't want to. I love it here. I love the people here. I love the food here. Gain a bit of kg. But yeah, I mean, we have, although it's quite safe, we do every 2 weeks or so. We would definitely have every week sirens. And then we track what is going on. And then often in the middle of the night, if west of Ukraine is a target, yeah, we often have half an hour or so to go to the shelter, stay there for a couple of hours until the threat is over. Mentioned by Russia.
In case anybody missed that part.
Exactly. By Russia. Not Putin. Putin and Russia. Just one bit bold there. Please don't poison my drink. But we have time limit when it's a hypersonic missile, so we have to be fast. And the thing that kills us morally and energy-wise in the West, at least, the West of Ukraine, is the torture of waking up at 3 or 4 o'clock where your REM sleep and, you know, you kind of where your brain is restoring and your body is restoring. You wake up there, go to the shelter at 6 o'clock in the morning, you're completely knackered. Yeah, I did a fundraise during that time. It was, I don't give up, man. Like, you can put a gun on my head and I will still be defiant, but time, fundraising is very, very difficult, and during, especially during these times. Fundraising during a wartime, I mean, it's extra challenging. Nothing in comparison to, it pales in comparison to what is going on in the east of Ukraine by the brave men and women of the armed forces that literally are defending Europe's democracy. I mean, it's history all over again. I have nothing more than admiration. And if these men and women can do it, I think we have the obligation. Literally, they are protecting our democracy and our ability to innovate. Right. So we may innovate to contribute to our economies, whether in Ukraine or in the UK. We owe it to them.
When you talk about grit, you talk about grind, that like just puts a wrapper on it that I think is good to know, because startups use war metaphor all the time. Now, that's a legit, actual, this is happening. And you're talking about it in the same way that we talk about, shit, the tornado alarm went off. I guess I'll go hide in my bathtub. And my power is going to be off, guys. I won't be on that meeting. It's so interesting to me. But it just, life goes on. Startup innovation goes on. We have a commitment to getting this done. And I just think it's really cool. And I appreciate the opportunity to share that story. Bless you all. Safety to everybody. And at least this guy is saying, keep up the good fight, literally. So, Eamon, John, Turin, Pebbles AI, it's trypebbles.ai is the site. People can join waitlist if they really got into this, what you were saying. Is that the best way to go?
Just go to trypebbles.ai and, you know, have a look, read on the website. And if it floats your boat, go on the waiting list. We've spoken to our finance team as well. The first 1,000 users were really good, because, you know, we really appreciate, we're new, obviously, and you know, I'm a person that wants a reward back. So first 1,000 users will get quite formidable discounts and added values and features, and they will be at our core. So we will create a WhatsApp group and they will all be in there and they will help shape the company so we can do it all together.
Very cool. We'll see how many we can drive. So, John, thank you for hanging out. Super cool conversation. So glad we could make it work, and really just look forward to updates. We'll have to do the round two maybe in what, like 8 months, a year, just see where things are at and what you learn.
March 2025. Let's do that.
Yeah, we'll be there. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, David. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Leaders of B2B Podcast. And as always, you can see more information about this episode and all the resources mentioned at leadersofb2b.com. If you enjoyed the show, please give us a 5-star rating. This episode is brought to you by Content Allies. We help B2B companies launch revenue-generating podcasts. We schedule interviews between you and your ideal prospects and strategic partners. You show up for engaging conversations, we handle everything else. Ready to build a podcast that grows your business in just 1 hour per week? Reach out to us at contentallies.com.